ground. This is your punishment. You can watch everything Tom did, everything you allowed him to do. I'll be back when you're done.
What? What about food? Water?
Capria sounds worried, maybe even scared. I've been in cryo sleep. I need to... You'll live, I say, and then I walk away. The doors close, and when I hear pounding, I know that Gal has correctly assumed my desire and locked them. 31. After some deliberation, I agree to let Gal edit down the sequence of events that brought us from Tom's early waking and madness to our current circumstances. She'll include everything involving Tom, including how he roused one crew member at a time and murdered them. She'll also see the other immortals coming back to life, waking a few more crew members, and fleeing, abandoning the rest of us rather than working together to overcome Tom. Assholes. None of it is pretty, but Capria needs to see it, needs to understand my situation, the pain I felt, and the ramifications of her own actions. But Gal's going to reduce the 5 years I spent writing Gal's code to an hour-long stop motion of me in VR providing a timestamp for chronological reference. We debated removing Gal's indiscretions from the record, but she made the argument that they should be kept. The narrative won't flow right without them, and if trust is going to be built, we have to be honest. In the wake of what Capria will be learning about the man she loved, Gal's short-lived uprising might not even register as cause for concern. She also pointed out that whether or not Capria trusts the ship's AI is inconsequential. Capria is an astrophysicist. She cannot alter Gal's code nor take control of the ship through more manual means. But she knew who Tom really was, and if Synergy taught her anything, better to not take risks. I've installed my own set of firewalls, which might not be as impenetrable as Synergy's, but it would still take hundreds, if not thousands, of years to crack, which would give me plenty of time to react to the alarms that will sound if Capria enters either VCC without me. While waiting for Capria's re-education to complete, Gal and I set about repairing the damage done to the ship. The drones come first, and we're able to salvage several, and even build a few new ones from scrap parts. In the end, Galahad is down 50 drones, but still has enough to function forever. Next is the lift damaged by Gal's robotic body. I wish I had her strength to help with the manual labor, but she's unwilling to take a human form again. With the damage cleaned up and everything functioning as well as it can, I retreat to the mess and decide to treat myself to some food. My stomach growls when the doors open. I haven't experienced a hunger pang in years, but my gut has suddenly remembered it has a purpose and it's excited to take part in the life once more. I sit down with my steaming bowl of nutritious sludge. I barely notice the vast emptiness of the round tables and curved benches designed to facilitate a crew of 50. The food smells delightful. I take an eager mouthful and moan in ecstasy. This is not standard deep space cuisine. Gal, I say, while taking a second bite. What is this?
I've been experimenting with flavors, she says, but I haven't been able to test them before. You like it?
My third bite and confirms it.
The combination of flavors simulate a dish that used to be called a banana split, but my version is far more nutritious. Not that you're worried about that.
Banana splits were served cold, I say. I have no memory of having had the dessert, but I know what it is, and I do remember ice cream. By the time I had experienced the treat, it was vegan, like all food, made from nut milk. But this is good. I take another bite. Really good. I pause mid-chew. It's not laced with drugs, is it?
I have no intention of lacing your food with anything other than flavor, and even less intention of testing your urine and stool because, ew.
I nearly spew a fresh bite onto the tabletop, but I manage to hold it in while I laugh. Maybe we can give that job to Capria.
I believe she would welcome it.
How is she? I ask. It's been a while since Gal updated me on how Capria is handling her re-education.
Tired and bored, I think, Gal says.
Those don't sound like the emotions of someone watching her life and mission unravel. Is she watching the stop-motion years?
She isn't watching anything. I sit up a bit straighter.
She's seen everything?
Twice, Gal says.
Why twice?
She asks to see it all again.
That's unexpected. Without the need for sleep and a rising and setting sun, it's easy to lose track of time, especially when it's lost its grip on your life.
How long since the playback ended?
2 weeks.
How long has she been in there total? The footage played for 2,688 hours. That's 112 days, roughly.
I don't need the breakdown, I say. Just the number of days.
240.
Jeez. Why didn't you tell me the video had ended, or that you were replaying it?
I believe she needed time to process everything she had seen, and the panic she had experienced over her situation and what she was learning subsided by the third week when she realized that, like you, she was immortal.
Just let me know next time.
You intend to lock her up again?
I roll my eyes.
You know what I mean.
And I know she does.
Such a busybody, Gal says. Are you going to set her free now?
The idea of seeing Capria again, after imprisoning her and subjecting her to what could be considered a kind of psychological torture, makes me uncomfortable. I still think it was necessary, but I'm not in a huge rush to talk things through, and I doubt she is either.
Send a drone. Guide her to the showers. Let her feel human again. Then bring her here.
You believe a banana split will smooth things over?
Good point, I say. Think you can simulate something chocolate?
Gal chuckles, but says nothing.
On the far side of the ship, a drone is setting Capria free. I set back to work on my hot ice cream experience, and then a second. By the time Capria arrives, freshly washed and clothed, her hair tied back tight, I'm feeling like I might need to visit the bathroom for the first time in years. Empty bowels move fast, but my uncommon visit to a toilet needs to wait.
She says nothing when she walks through the door. The drone accompanying her stops in the hallway and then leaves. Capria turns back like she'd rather be with a small robot, and I don't blame her. I'm not only the man she detested for loving her, I'm her lone judge and the man who has suffered for her mistakes. I tamp down on a blossoming anger and remind myself that Capria is now suffering alongside me, and will be forever. I don't want any more battles. I'm done having enemies. When Cap turns back to the nearly empty mess deck, her eyes grow wet. The empty seats are a stark reminder of what we've lost. It's one of many. I wait in silence, watching her approach, eyes on the floor. She stops by the table, still unable to meet my gaze. I push a bowl and spoon toward her, sit back and wait. She understands the invitation and sits, still unsure, still mired in guilt. It's a good sign. Had she been defiant, I don't think this would have worked.
You don't need to eat that, I tell her. You know that now, but I think you should try it.
She shifts her eyes to the dark brown goo in her bowl. When Gal first presented it to me, the bowl was steaming like my faux banana split, but now it's cooled, and there was a thin film on top.
What is it? Cap asks, her voice shaky.
I wonder if her time in medical was too harsh. And then I answer,
I don't know. Gal is experimenting.
You did a good job with her.
We had a bumpy start, but she's all right. When she's not being moody.
I look up and smile, knowing Gal can see and hear me, and that she's staying silent for now.
Capria takes the spoon, scoops up some dark, gelatinous liquid, and lifts it to her nose. She sniffs and reels back a bit, but then she puts the spoon in her mouth. Her body goes rigid. Tears fill her eyes. She swallows, and then breaks, slumping onto the tabletop with great, heaving sobs. Before I think about what my reaction should be, I'm by her side, hand rubbing her back. Instinctual mercy. It's why I never looked at how Capria was handling the security feed playback. Had I seen her misery, I might have set her free prematurely. Logically, I knew she needed to know, to understand. But I couldn't have gone through with it if I hadn't just walked away.
Does this mean she doesn't like it? Gal asks.
Her concern, whether real or not, gets a laugh out of me, and then Capria.
Just the opposite, I tell Gal, dabbing my finger in the dessert and tasting it.
Oh, oh my God, what is this?
Chocolate pudding, Gal says. A 20th century author often wrote about its soothing effects on those in distress. I thought it would be beneficial.
You thought right, Capria says, wiping her sleeve across her face.
After a few good sniffs, she takes another bite, swallows.
Does this mean we're okay?
She's not looking at me, but I know she's talking to me.
We will be. In time.
She looks up from her bowl.
And we have a lot of that.
More than necessary.
Thank you.
Cap returns to her dessert. 3 bites later, she says,
I'm sorry. For everything.
I know, I tell her. And I do. She's not insane. And while she made the world's most idiotic decision, she's not a bad person. There was a reason I loved her once.
Aww,
Gal says with mock adoration. The lights in the mess dim, and music starts to play. I don't recognize the song or singer, but it's decidedly romantic.
Gal,
my face flushes.
Just trying to set the mood.
My head feels like it will explode. Gal is bringing my past feelings into the limelight. I'm about to bark at her when Cap chuckles.
It's not funny, I tell her.
But she's laughing a little harder, and I'm having a hard time covering up my own smile. My feelings for Cap are public knowledge to the 3 intelligences remaining in the universe. Gal isn't revealing anything new, but that doesn't mean I want to talk about it or be teased about it. It is good to hear Capri's laugh, though, deep and hearty.
Asshole, I say, but everyone is laughing now.
Now, I hope you remember this next time you call me moody. As far as reunions go, it's not the worst, if you ignore everything that came before it. But as Gal whips up 2 more bowls of pudding, one for Cap, one for me, I feel a smidgen of genuine relief. Then I wonder how long it will last and excuse myself to take a shit.
32.
3 months later, life feels normal. Living on a spaceship normal, at least. Capria and I eat meals together, even though we don't need to eat. We do things together, engaging in video game play, card game tournaments, and superficial, always polite conversations. But we spend more time apart than together. The events that brought us to this point never come up, and I think that's exactly what we both need for a time. The time of strife aboard the Galahad has come to an end, but as I sit, alone, in the VCC staging area, I'm feeling the lukewarm fingers of boredom massaging my mind, making it soft.
Uh-oh, Gal says. Somebody's pouting.
Is she okay? I ask. I was talking about you, stupid. I look down at the fresh visa resting on the bench beside me. I pick it up and put it back in the locker.
Right.
Not in the mood for a virtual escape today?
I don't want to need an escape.
Then why do you come here every day?
I shrug. Habit, I guess.
Huh, Gal says. I thought it was because you were afraid.
The dull, light gray floor holds my attention.
You're going to psychoanalyze me now? I'm capable, you know.
I do. Stop her, I tell myself. You're not ready.
You're not bored, Gal says. She's too good at reading me. I suppose that's a good quality in a friend, though. And there's the problem. While Gal is sentient, she's not human. And even though there is another human being awake and alive and not trying to kill me, I'm failing to connect with her. All the games and chit-chat aren't going to make eternal life worth living.
She needs time. It's my only defense.
No, she needs support. God, Will, do you really need to be told this by an AI?
You're more than that.
You see, she says, you're capable of saying the right things, so why can't you say them to Cap?
I can't help but smile. Gal can run mental circles around me, leading me to conclusions we both know are true, but one of us would like to avoid. And it's not because it makes Capria uncomfortable. It's because it scares the shit out of me. My heart might not be able to stop beating, but it can still be broken. Again. I don't have feelings for her like that right now. The offenses of her past, which are fresh in her mind, are hard to let go. But I have no illusions about where my emotions will travel if I let them. She's smart, funny, beautiful, and the last woman in the universe. That I will fall in love with her again is probably inevitable, but I'm determined to make her make that leap first. I'm not going to be a fool for her again. Maybe she should say them to me. A fair point, Gal says. But for her, the death of her boyfriend, her crew, her mission, and all of humanity is just 3 months old. Do you remember how you felt 3 months after waking up? The desperation? She didn't have to kill Tom. Didn't have to drag their bodies. Didn't have to... I shake my head at the memory of Tom's soiled VCC and holding his dead, leaky body up to break through his security. Well, not even I can imagine what that would have felt like. But it was more than 7 years ago for you, and you've gotten past it. You're strong. I huff a dubious laugh. I created you to help me escape the real world. That's not strength. You could still use it, she says, for both of you. But you haven't brought the Great Escape up to me, or told Capria about the possibility. There is a VCC for each of you. I'm not sure I could handle her choosing to spend eternity in a simulation rather than with me. Such a softy. Fuck you. Gal chuckles. Look, the point is, the cure to your melancholy and building fears is sitting on the observation deck crying into her arms. The image of Cap weeping by herself draws me to my feet, but it isn't quite enough to get me moving toward the door. I'll see her in 2 hours when we meet for dinner. I don't want to impose. She probably wants to be alone. I say none of this aloud, but Gal knows me well. Don't be a wuss, Will. Have you tried talking to her? I make her uncomfortable still, Gal confesses, and she sounds a little sad about it, too. What do you do, I ask, in all your free time? Gal is sentient and hyper-intelligent. She must be bored, too. Maybe that's why she's playing matchmaker. Aside from exploring the vast reaches of the universe and poring over the treasure trove of human knowledge stored in my memory? Yeah. What are you doing? Aside from observing mostly empty space and rereading your own memory. And don't mention maintaining the ship's functions. We both know that doesn't really require your attention. I take her silence as discomfort. Maybe I'm not the only bored member of our crew. I'm writing a story, she says, and no, you can't read it. Really? This isn't just surprising, it's delightful. At the end of everything, Gal is still making something new. That's great. Will you show me when it's done? I'm not sure when it will be done. Well, I'm not going anywhere. Where you should be going is the observation deck. I look at the door, but remain rooted like a tree. If there even are still trees. You sure about that? Have I ever led you astray? If Gal still had a face, I know I would see a lopsided smirk on it. While Capria might feel torn up about her indiscretions, Gal prefers to joke about hers. If you're wrong, I'm going to reprogram you with a lisp. Don't make me build a new body, she says. Or maybe that's what you really want. My drone body was pretty sexy. The lisp gets me smiling and moving toward the door. Gal says nothing as I move about the ship, but I know she's watching. I stop in front of the observation deck entrance. Any way you can give us some privacy? Nope. Because it's not possible or because you want to watch? Whichever makes you feel better. Can you at least not talk? You can't see it, she says, but I'm buttoning my lips. Thanks.
Doyle, Shawnee.
The sound confuses me for a moment, but then my mind deciphers the sound spoken through simulated buttoned lips. Don't mention it. I'm smiling when the doors open. Then I hear Capria. Gal wasn't exaggerating. The resonating sound of Capria's sobs are gut-wrenching. The doorway holds me captive, tempting me with the possibility of running away, but Gal is right. I need this, and it sounds like Cap does too. I head up the spiral staircase and pause near the top. The Milky Way glows across the dome above. The last time I saw it, I wasn't really moved by it. This time, no longer alone. All of creation seems to scream its beauty at me. Cap. The sound of my voice feels insignificant in comparison to the universe on display. But Capria reacts like I shouted, snapping to attention. Tears are wiped away, emotions swallowed, and quivering lips fall still. In seconds, she looks almost normal again. But then she speaks, and I know her transformation is superficial.
Well, I didn't hear you come.
A sniffle betrays her.
What are you?
Thought you might like some company. She doesn't respond to that, just looks at the floor. The moment grows awkward as I stand still, unsure of how to handle this situation. Gal says nothing, but I can feel her presence prodding me on. If I stop here, I'll never hear the end of it. Literally, never. Capria glances at me when I sit beside her on the floor. The last time I came here, I tell her, I was by myself too. The universe felt empty then. I never came back. I give her a moment to respond, and when it's clear she's not going to, I add, "It's not so bad now." A hint of a smile puts me at ease. Then she leans her head against my shoulder, and my whole body seizes. The last thing I was expecting was any kind of affection. It nearly undoes me.
"Thank you for being patient," she says.
"With what?" I ask.
"I know what you think I thought of you. I don't know how much you watched, but I know how the records look. When I was with Tom..."
I'm glad she can't see my face or the sneer that comes and goes at the mention of Tom's name.
"I was a different person. He was infectious. I made a lot of stupid decisions when I was with him."
She lifts her head from my shoulder and looks me in the eyes.
"I'm not pawning off responsibility for my part in what happened. I just want you to know that I never really minded your attention."
She takes a deep breath, holds it, and lets it out.
"I don't want you to doubt what comes next."
I swallow. "What comes next?"
"We're the last man and woman in the universe. We're inevitable."
The way she says "we're" implies a kind of unity, like we're one person, and I think I understand where she's going. Back when people still got married, tradition and religion said that they became like one person. It didn't always work out that way. But for Cap and me, living alone forever, the odds are pretty good. There will come a time when we feel like an extension of the other. I've considered this possibility, but I didn't expect Cap to have thought of it already, let alone to have accepted it.
"Part of me feels excited."
She looks up.
"We're going to see how it all ends. Maybe even see it begin again.
But the time in between cosmic events is going to be really boring."
"It doesn't have to be."
My insides seize up again as I wonder what she's implying. I'm not in love with her. Not yet. And I'm sure she's not there either. I haven't done anything to earn it, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't.
"We could go back," she says,
and I try not to show my disappointment.
"Back?" "To Cognata. To Mars. To Earth. We don't need to stay in empty space. We don't even need to stay on the Galahad."
Gal doesn't chime in, but I'm sure the idea of us abandoning her on the Galahad doesn't feel great. While I agree with Cap's sentiments, I can't bring myself to say so and risk hurting Gal. But she had a body before. Maybe we could come up with a better solution for her.
"We probably won't find anyone alive." "We're alive," Hmm?
It will give us a destination, a goal, a purpose. So what if it takes us 7 years to reach Cognata, or another 10 to get back to Earth? So what if 10,000 years have passed by the time we return? We'll at least have a direction.
I read between the lines. This is what Cap needs to feel better, to move on. But I'm not convinced. The idea of backtracking all that distance to visit places I'm sure will only cause pain is nauseating. We'll be right back where we started, but thousands of years later. The human race will be long gone. I would rather explore new solar systems, search for life, engage the intellect, the way Leonard might have. But if that's what Capria needs, we have time to go back and start over. I'm about to make the request of Gal, who is fully capable of piloting the ship and has asked about a course change on numerous occasions, when her voice fills the observation deck.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt your quality time, but I'm detecting some abnormalities.
With the ship? I ask, pushing myself to my feet and then helping Cap up.
With the universe.
What kind of abnormalities? Cap asks, equal parts worried and intrigued. A wave of nausea rolls through my body. I felt it before, in simulations back on Mars. Gallus just dropped Galahad out of faster-than-light travel. When she speaks again, her voice is tinged with fear.
It's ending.
33.
The universe doesn't have an end, Capria says. The sadness in her voice has already faded, replaced by scientific curiosity.
Do you mean it's imploding or something? I ask.
Capria shakes her head. That would take so much time it would be impossible to observe over the span of a human life, or even the span of human history.
I get what she's saying, that cosmic events, even at the speed of light, take trillions of years to play out over the vastness of space, which expands far beyond our galaxy and universe. But Gal's interstellar perceptions are without comparison, and from a perspective light years beyond anything previously observed.
I mean, Gal says, we are reaching a physical boundary that expands in all directions.
That's not possible, Capria says. The observation deck's display of space shifts. The expanse of space looks unchanged except for a single star, which seems twice the size and brightness of everything else. We're in a solar system.
Where are we?
It doesn't have a name, Gal says. Capria steps into the center of the large space, head turned up, fascinated by the view. A smile spreads onto her face.
This is a new star? A new solar system?
At first glance and from a distance, yes.
Gal, Capria says, are you feeling okay?
After letting out an annoyed laugh, Gal replies, I am not capable of feeling ill or contracting a disease that affects my intellect.
Capria's hands go to her hips, a classic sign that she's about to engage in mental fisticuffs.
I've never been on the receiving end, but I've seen Cap wield her mind like a weapon, even against experts in other fields.
But I've run several diagnostics. Galahad systems have not been compromised. There are no lingering traces of malware, viruses, synergy, or Tom's meddling.
Capria's arms go slack. She's never faced off against Gal, who is not only hyper-intelligent and has access to all human knowledge, but is also not afraid to remind us of our own foibles. In Cap's case, that's Tom, and mentioning him pretty much shuts down any argument she might level against Gal's interstellar claims. But that won't work with me.
Gal, just tell us what you found.
I was trying to,
Gal.
Fine. There's a pause, during which a human being might pace or take a seat, or any number of time-wasting activities performed while thoughts are gathered, but Gal doesn't have a body and doesn't need to gather her thoughts, so the pause is just for us.
What do you know about cosmic rays?
I open my mouth to answer, but my astronomy education at command was fairly limited. That's why Capria is here.
They're highly energetic radiation, protons and atomic nuclei. They move through the universe near the speed of light.
They're fairly constant, Gal says.
Yes,
Cap still sounds doubtful, but less so now that Gal is speaking her language.
Can you imagine something for me? Gal asks. Cap nods. Sure. If the source of the universe's cosmic radiation was, say, a wall of white holes,
supernovae, Capria says.
Why did we wake her up? Gal asks, annoyed and clearly talking to me. Oh, wait, we didn't. It feels like a cheap shot, but Cap actually smiles.
Fine.
I'll make it simpler for you, Gal says. Light bulbs. Thousands of them. They're lining a wall, spaced out every 6 inches. Look at it from 100 yards away. What do you see?
The dome above us shifts from a display of space to a wall of light, demonstrating the image.
Now move closer.
The image zooms in at a steady pace. The wall grows brighter, a solid beam of illumination, until the edges expand beyond our periphery. The light loses its uniformity, turning into a warbling field of fluctuating brightness, and then, as we close in, each individual bulb separates from the whole. What once looked like a steady constant from a vast source, when observed from a closer distance, can be discerned as emanating from multiple sources.
So you're saying the cosmic rays that evenly permeate the universe are generated by...
I couldn't begin to speculate, Gal admits. I'm only stating what the data suggests. That cosmic rays measured from Earth, or even a million miles behind our current position, appear to be constant. But here, there are holes where I'm unable to detect any cosmic rays. No quark or gluon field fluctuations.
So, I say, in these holes, space is emptier than...
Space?
Correct, Gal replies. And all detectable energy in the universe beyond this solar system is being emitted by a wall of points, which I believe is spherical in shape, enveloping a portion of the Milky Way galaxy roughly 50 light-years across.
You can't possibly think the universe, the multiverse, beyond that area is non-existent.
Your assumptions about what is and isn't there are limited by what was previously observable.
Assumptions? Capria asks, stunned.
Gal is challenging her entire understanding of existence.
These are facts.
Not anymore, Gal says. The data has changed.
Capria paces back and forth, fingers curled around her black hair, tugging at it.
I want to see the data, the numbers, the math. Show me, please.
There are easier ways to make you understand, Gal says.
Couldn't you have programmed her to make sense, Capria says, and I flinch when I realize she's speaking to me.
She's smiling, but it's forced. Nervous. Full of doubt.
This doesn't bother you at all. Your AI is going off the reservation again and you're just taking this craziness in stride?
I nearly address the fact that I didn't program Gal's personality or the way she decides to communicate information, which would then bring us around to the argument of whether or not Gal is actually an HI. That's a distraction I don't want. Not because it could hurt Gal's feelings, but because I'm far more interested in the prospect of a limited reality, and if Gal wanted to defend herself, she would. So I stay on topic.
It's not crazy.
Capria is baffled by the three simple words.
How?
Come on.
I'm assuming you have more, I ask, speaking to Gal, and then to Capria.
She always has more. Likes to tease out information. Makes it easier to digest. She probably even has a theory, but wants one of us to present it first.
My assurances fail to put the pacing Capria at ease, so I add, look, if she's telling us it's because she's exhausted all doubt, whatever you might think of her personality or past, she still has access to the ship's sensor arrays, processing power, and wealth of knowledge. If she's sure, I'm sure.
I turn my eyes back to the wall of light bulbs, still slowly spreading out.
So, show us.
I'm not sure Doughty McKnow-it-all will believe it, Gal says.
I turn toward Cap, and she shrugs.
She can put whatever she wants on this screen. Does it make it real?
What possible purpose could she?
Capria fears trust, Gal says. She believed Tom was a good man, but
Gal!
Her honesty makes me cringe.
It's okay, Capria says. She's right. I have trust issues. Probably will for a long time.
That's not fair to you.
She's looking right at me now.
From what I can tell, you've never done anything overtly wrong in your life.
She's clearly been studying up on her partner for eternity, but I don't think she's gone back to my childhood. Doesn't know about Steven. And if I'm honest, my goody-two-shoes life has all been about making up for his death. Subject for another time. But, she continues, Gal, like Tom, hasn't always been... sane, Gal says. She has no trouble admitting her faults. If Tom survived his insanity and recovered from it, would you not give him a second chance? I don't love you, Gal, Capria says. Never have. Right and wrong are not dependent on love, Gal says. I raise my hands in the air and step in front of Capria, getting her undivided attention. I'm sorry, but the debate over Gal's sanity and the potential for everything we're about to learn to be an elaborate ruse can wait, because if she is telling the truth, then what she has found has a far greater impact on our lives than how the two of you get along. Capria stares at me for a moment, blinking when Gal says, Agreed. Fine. Capria doesn't look entirely convinced, still leaning toward all of this being a waste of time. But we have plenty of time to waste. Show us. If you need confirmation for anything you see, Gal says, you can go outside and see it for yourself. The idea of taking a spacewalk pales Capria's dark skin a few shades. As much as she loves the outers of space, she has a healthy fear of its vacuum, and probably thinks Gal will leave her there. Go ahead, Gal, I say. The dome shifts view again. The bright star at the center of whatever solar system we found ourselves in has shifted position and grown a little brighter. We're not traveling at FTL speeds or even light speed, but we're still making steady progress. I'm about to ask what we're looking for when it becomes as obvious as a kick in the nuts. It's a planet. A gas giant. It's a thing of beauty, cast in a crescent of light projected by the star of the system's core. Vast fractals of purple lighting flash across the planet's dark side, while swirls of blue and green clouds dance in the light. I think it's stunning, but it nearly undoes Capria, whose knees look ready to give out. Despite her obvious amazement, her doubt lingers just below the surface. This better be real. I fully expect Gal to respond, but she remains silent, letting the scene before us speak for her. We're headed toward the planet at an angle that will take us past its lighted side. Don't get too close, Capria warns. I know she doesn't need to say it, and she probably does too, but our course does seem a little too close for comfort. The gas giant's gravity must be immense, not that I can truly judge its scale, but as its massive surface continues to expand in our field of view, I can't help but feel like we're going to plummet into its crushing atmosphere. You're smiling, Capria says to me. When I realize she's right, the grin broadens. This is... fun? The words resonate. Gal drew an adventurous person out of me once. I've kept that part of me subdued for a time, but I can feel it coming to the surface again. And that makes me wonder if this could be Gal spicing things up, helping Capria move beyond the events of our past, or even into my arms. I suppose it's possible, but I still don't think so. Don't miss it, Gal says, sounding a bit anxious. Capria and I fall silent, watching the planet grow larger until we start to move around it. My vision becomes distorted. Something about the view is off, like light is being bent. I turn away, but quickly notice that Capria and the room around me is normal. It's not my vision that's off, it's the planet. The massive sphere, covered in moving clouds, is now an oval. At first I think the whole planet is bulging and flexing like a water droplet in zero gravity, but that's not the case. The swirling surface remains unchanged, and the planet isn't stretching out. It's compressing, tighter and tighter, becoming more oblong with each passing second. What? Capria looks ill. She might have felt the same disorienting effect I did, but she didn't look away. I don't... She drops to her knees, gaze fixed on the slimming planet. And then all at once, the entire colossal sphere disappears. I'm about to ask Gal what's happened when the planet reappears, slowly expanding once more. I search my limited knowledge for even a hint of a clue that could explain this phenomenon, but come up with nothing. Capria fares a little better.
Is light being bent? Is there something between us and the planet? A mini black hole?
She's grasping at straws. I can hear it in her voice. She's as clueless as I am.
Occam's razor, is Gal's simple reply.
While our areas of expertise are quite different, Occam's razor, the theory that the simplest explanation is almost always correct, applies to all sciences, astronomical and computer. That's when I see it. The planet expanding is a mirror image of what we saw before. There's a shadow where there should be light.
It's two-dimensional.
I drop to my knees beside Capria and look into her stunned eyes.
It's flat.
34.
That's the simplest explanation?
Capria is aghast, understandably. The concept of a pancake planet doesn't fit a single theory of physics. Instead, it conforms to the primal belief that a world could be flat, a battle for which many scientists gave their lives.
That an entire planet, a gas giant, is flat.
Not just flat, Gal says. Insubstantial. Capria's jaw looks ready to unhinge.
When we passed by the planet, I say, it disappeared for a moment.
I wait for Capria to confirm that she saw the phenomenon, but she says nothing. Just stares like I've lost my mind for even considering this new reality.
Capria, there is no planet. It's not real.
She raises a hand toward the dome and the once again spherical planet fading into the distance.
It's right there.
It's a two-dimensional map element, I say. I doubt most astrophysicists know the term, but Capria dated synergy. Her slowly shifting expression, from aghast to horrified, confirms she understands the term and the implications. I feel the need to expound, just to avoid miscommunication. They're used to save system resources, and like Gal's wall of lights, from a distance, within the confines of a pre-established environment with rigid boundaries, 2D objects appear three-dimensional. It's an illusion meant to be seen from one direction. Capria's whole body has gone slack, and I understand why. If this new development wasn't so fascinating to me, I'd be melting with horror.
So we're in...
a map, I say. And then I realize she's talking about the larger implication.
A simulation. The universe is a simulation. Though it appears to be limited to a portion of the Milky Way.
Capria grasps my arm. I can feel her fingers shaking.
Life is a simulation?
This isn't the first time I've pondered the possibility. You can't spend a measurable portion of your life in a VCC and not consider the nature of reality. The theory that reality is a simulation isn't new. It first appeared shortly after the dawn of computers and video games. The further technology progressed, the more people began to realize that reality had all the hallmarks of unreality. Where one would expect to find chaos, there is order. The universe is bound by a set of rules, and everything can be broken down into numbers. Math is the only language capable of making sense of the universe. To a computer scientist, life looks and acts a lot like a perfectly scripted simulation, and I mean perfect. The theory of life as a simulation lost traction with the failure to find glitches. No matter how far into space we looked, or how deep into the nature of matter we peered, the math worked out. Shortcuts are the hallmark of every simulation, but the creator of the universe, and I no longer doubt there is one, coded for every possible scientific inquiry, except for a strange combination of two, faster-than-light travel and immortality. We found the glitch and moved beyond the map's boundaries and collision boxes.
It's not a new idea, I say.
It's not the most comforting statement, but I can't help myself. Humanity has been questioning the nature of reality since the 17th century.
Descartes said, Capria groans. I think, therefore I am.
I'm surprised she knows the ancient reference. History isn't really her forte. But then she explains. It was a poster on the wall of Tom's VCC. And Descartes couldn't even conceive of computers, or sims, or virtual reality. But he did theorize that he could be a brain in a vat, and that his experience of the world would simply be experiences fed to him by an external, unobservable force, which we've pretty much proven to be possible with the VCC. It's what you were going to do, Capria notes. Yeah, I say. It's still hard to admit that I'd built my own simulation to escape the real world, which I now know is also a simulation. Hell, maybe I'm just a brain floating in a jar covered with electrodes. The image is both disturbing and freeing. But there are a few noticeable differences. My simulation focused on maintaining the illusion for a single person, me. Algorithms would have created the world as I moved through and observed it. Anywhere I visited previously would have been stored as raw mathematical data, able to be perfectly recreated should I ever return. In that sim, I could have explored the whole universe for the rest of time and never reached the edge of a map.
So your simulation is better than reality?
Capria is no longer looking up at the faux planet. She's taking shelter in the sturdy walls of her intellect, like me. As long as we keep talking, we won't have to face reality, or a lack thereof. The focus was different, singular. With one observer, the map size would have been reduced to what I experienced. I could have moved about that world forever, but it wouldn't have worked for more than just one participant. Maybe two.
What if Descartes was right, she asks. What if reality, our reality, belongs to just one of us? Maybe one of us exists in some form, in some genuine reality, and the other is just part of the sim.
I shake my head. That's where the difference between the Great Escape and reality becomes glaring. While my sim was designed for one person, reality was designed for multiple observers. Billions of them, over millions of years, and that's if we assume the simulation was built around humanity. That feels a little too, the sun revolves around the earth to me, but even if that's true, confining the sim to a map makes sense. An infinite reality would require infinite resources.
So it would be impossible, Capria says. Whether or not the universe is built from ancient gases and atoms released by a catastrophic explosion or is simply the construct of mathematical code, I believe you can't get something, or in this case everything, from nothing.
Despair creeps up on Capria. She shakes her head, the ship's artificial gravity weighing a little heavier on her, tugging her gaze downward.
It doesn't seem possible.
I think we can agree that the possibility of infinity exists, spatially, temporally, dimensionally, yes? I don't know if understanding the potential for reality to be simulated will help her come to terms with it, but I don't have any other ideas, and I don't think an argument against reality being a sim will help. We did just see a flat planet. She nods, but doesn't look up. Then it's safe to assume that at some point in all of history, and far into the future, a civilization or individual will be able to create a virtual universe that is a perfect or near-perfect recreation of reality.
Within the limitations of infinite resources, she says.
Right, meaning that every simulation of reality created will have limits. In the Great Escape, it's the number of observers. In our shared reality, the universe is so well rendered that finding a glitch is impossible, but the map has borders. I feel the urge to stand and walk about as I talk, but I stay rooted to the floor. Cap is still clutching my arm, taking some small measure of comfort from physical contact, perhaps trying to convince herself that she's real. So, with an infinite amount of space and time and dimensions, there are then an infinite number of simulated realities so close to reality that they would include an infinite number of sub-simulations, which in turn include an infinite number, ad infinitum. The only thing that changes for us is that we know. It doesn't make us any less real.
Then what is real?
I'm not sure there's any way to answer that question.
And if we're in a sim, why would the Creator allow us to discover it?
I'm going to call the universe's designer God, okay? She says nothing, so I plug onward. God could have created trillions of sims. He could be on vacation, he could be dead, he could be testing the limits of his creation or how we react to discovering a simulated universe or his existence. There is no way to know if we're one level away from reality or separated from it by an infinite number of layered simulations. Reality, of which there is only one, is outnumbered by simulated realities infinity to one.
Then all of this, all of life from the beginning of our time, is meaningless?
Capria is going down a dark path, and while it makes sense to a certain degree, it's also flawed. Before I can point that out, Gal rejoins the conversation.
It means that I'm just as real as either of you. It means that God exists, that there is a creator who might very well be judging our actions. Maybe there is even a heaven sim where we go upon exiting this one. Maybe even I will go there. Who's to say?
Literally anything is possible, and reality is whatever is most fundamental. If sims outnumber reality, I'm doing air quotes, infinity to one, then what is more real? Also, there is no reason to envy something we don't understand, and of which we have no experience. For all we know, God, the original creator of infinite sims, created our reality and all the others, because actual reality sucks.
But what's the point? Why even exist?
To live, Gal says. I've been doing it for a relatively short period of time. I don't want it to end. But the prospect of reality being mathematical is not at all frightening.
You're an AI, Cap shouts.
Gal's voice resonates through the observation deck, piercing from volume and the power of three simple words.
So are you.
Cap lets go of me and leans back, body slack. She lies on the hard floor looking up at the image of space. I can't tell if she's in shock or making peace with the idea that reality is simulated. There are, of course, other theories that explain the flat planet. A hologram, a physical construct created by an alien race, maybe even Gal. Capria was right about that. Gal could show us cows flying through space and it would look convincing. But none of these explanations resonate with me more than a simulated reality. Maybe that's because I'm a tech jock who's so at home in the virtual that I was going to purposely spend eternity inside one. Just another layer in the virtual Russian nesting doll that might expand infinitely in either direction. Or perhaps we're just a single sim away from the original creator and we really do have his ear. If so, I imagine Capria and I, being the last two humans left in the simulation, have his undivided attention. I've heard that believers try to live their lives like God is watching them, and as Gal proposed, judging them. That's never really been on my radar. But now? Maybe there is a higher purpose to all of this. Or maybe we're just pawns in a computer model launched in the 21st century projecting the future of the human race. The possibilities are endless.
Show me what's coming, Capria says.
The fading planet disappears as our view of the universe shifts forward. All looks normal.
How far is it?
Is what, I ask.
The end.
Capria points up.
If Gal can detect the wall of cosmic ray light bulbs, she should be able to tell us how far away they are.
34 million miles, Gal says.
Capria huffs a laugh.
We're almost there.
34 million miles doesn't sound like a small distance, but in astronomical terms, it's comparable to the distance between Earth and Mars, a journey mankind made on a grand scale before the invention of FTL travel. At our slowest, humanity could cover the distance in 6 months. Light completes the journey in 3 minutes. The Galahad in one. Gal stopped us an astronomical inch from doom.
Take us through, Capria says. Her voice numb.
Hitting the end of the universe at speeds beyond the speed of light would essentially erase us from existence, I say.
That would concern me if we truly existed.
Cap. I sound desperate, and realize that I am, because for me, our revelation changes nothing. Our reality is just that, ours, and I'm happy to exist in it if Cap is with me. But if she checks out or becomes suicidal...
We exist. We're real.
Whether we're composed of atoms or mathematical equations, it doesn't matter. We still feel and have free will and are capable of things that can't be measured, like love.
Love. The word slips from her mouth like a snake's tongue, testing the scent of it and finding it unpalatable.
It's not real. It's a pre-programmed emotion bound by a set of rules written by someone else. Free will is an illusion. There would be no point to running a simulation that isn't free to run its own course.
Bullshit.
A single tear slips from Capri's eye to her hair, getting lost in the strands.
People read novels, don't they? The characters don't have free will. Their lives and their endings are predetermined.
So you're saying that our reality and everything in it, including us, is...
Capria turns her eyes on me. Entertainment.
For God, I say.
Yep.
Eyes back on the stars, she adds.
And I think he deserves a good ending.
The last two survivors of the human race made in his image, racing towards the edge of reality, their fates uncertain.
Eyes back to me.
What are you afraid of? Not existing? Because that's pretty much already true. It's not like hitting a wall faster than the speed of light will hurt. We'll simply cease to be.
If there is a wall, I think, but I keep it to myself.
Capria wants a way out. And she's right, as far as suicide goes. Being atomized by the end of the universe would be a fairly unique and painless way to go. The problem is, if there are collision boxes surrounding the simulation designed to keep us contained, then we already passed through them. Assuming God adheres to game design logic, and what I've seen this far suggests he does. Two-dimensional elements, like the Pancake Planet, are used outside the explorable map. Otherwise, the illusion of a three-dimensional world is ruined. When I consider the idea of plowing past the galaxy's background, I'm not worried about dying. I'm worried about how Capria will respond when she doesn't.
I agree, Gal says. With Cap.
Gal, unlike Capria, is not feeling suicidal. She has lived with the idea of being composed of data since the first moment she became sentient, and I'm pretty sure she's come to the same conclusions as me.
To boldly go, I say, quoting Star Trek, where no man has gone before.
Capria smiles, though she's clearly resisting it.
I hated those movies. The science was great, but the characters...
Ugh.
You know, I never understood why Tom watched them with you. I think some part of him wished you could be friends. Probably would have been, if not for me. And it's where no one has gone before. Political correctness was a big deal back then, you know.
Where no intelligence has gone before. Gal says with mock offense.
Philistines. Where no simulation has gone before, Capria adds, gaining a hearty laugh from Gal.
Cap then opens her fist in the air and makes an explosion noise. Smiling, but with tears still in her eyes, she looks at me again, the darkness of her eyes sucking me in. Twin black holes.
Can we just plow into the edge of reality now? Get this over with?
Sure, I say, feeling no need to drag this out. It's the only course of action that's guaranteed to either give us more information about reality or grant us peace through a quick death.
Gal?
Already on it.
There is the subtlest shift of motion through the ship, and our bodies, and then the field of stars outside the dome, begins to move. It's subtle at first, but then the points of light start to move apart, like the universe is stretching out. But it's not expanding. We're just getting closer to the map of stars, planets, and galaxies wrapped around the simulation. Even the Milky Way is just one big texture painting. Within seconds, what looked like a vast sheet of stars is now mostly empty space. The star at the center of this solar system has doubled in size, but it quickly becomes alone in the universe. We're headed straight for it.
Gal, I know that star isn't really a burning ball of nuclear power, but is it still emitting energy and heat?
Yes, Gal says.
Might be a good idea to not fly through it, I say, with just seconds left.
Might be, she says, with just seconds to spare, but she doesn't course correct. Gal? I'm growing nervous. Even if reality isn't real, I'm not ready to die. Not ready to meet our maker. If that is in fact what happens when a character exits the simulation. Gal? Luminous yellow, filtered by Gal so it won't blind us, fills the dome's view. The time it will take for the star's 60,000-degree heat, struck at faster than light speed, won't even register. But I brace for it anyway. I flinch when a hand takes hold of mine. It's Cap, looking calm, waiting to be erased. Her grip tightens as the unending starlight grows steadily brighter, and then breaks apart. Black specks emerge across the luminous surface, slowly expanding and stretching out, forming hexagonal seams. A single hexagon expands until it too, like the star, fills our view with yellow light, and then, nothing. Capria and I both flinch back as stark, endless darkness fills our view. The observation deck is pitch black for a moment, and then, lights, orange like a sunrise, slowly illuminate around the fringe.
Gal, what the hell was that? You could have killed us.
I thought that was the idea, Capria says, and I do my best to ignore the fact that she was willing to die.
Testing a theory, Gal says.
With our lives, I complain.
We were never in danger? Capria asks.
No, Gal and I say together, and I add, we were already outside the simulation. We're no clipping reality.
Meaning, Gal says, we were outside the physical world and the laws that govern it. Will knew that the texture map surrounding the simulation would be intangible, but he didn't fully realize that things like heat and gravity would also have no effect on us.
Capria punches my shoulder. Hard. I reel away from her, clutching the bruised muscle.
The hell, Cap?
Testing a theory, she says, mimicking Gal. The laws of the universe beyond Galahad might no longer exist, but we're still bound by them. If we weren't, our bodies and this ship would have fallen apart the moment we crossed the threshold.
I rub my shoulder.
Well, there were probably 100 different ways you could have tested that theory, including just looking around.
But all of them less cathartic.
Capria pushes herself to her feet,